Welcome to another edition of Meet the Community here this morning on AM 1340 KXEO. I'm your host, Matt Pilger. Joining me in our studio this morning, Mexico Public Safety Chief Bryce Mesko and Audrain County Sheriff Matt Aller. I want to say good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you guys in here. We're going to talk a little bit this morning about Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad. This has been in the news lately. A lot of people don't know what Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad is. I believe both of you gentlemen are on the board of Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad. It's been in the news lately because of Mason Sheets, who was a Fulton teen that was shot and killed last month in Fulton, found in a vehicle. Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad, of course, was activated there. We're going to start off with Chief Mesko. Tell us a little bit about Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad and how it gets activated, if you will.
Okay, sure. Yeah, it's a formal partnership amongst a lot of agencies, 11 sheriff's departments, 13 police departments, in kind of this area, in this footprint, close to the Troop F footprint, but it's a little different. And basically we all agree to, if there's a serious crime, work together or donate resources to get the crime solved. And a little more, we all, it's a formal way to investigate the crimes, to where it can be, a lot of information can be sorted through in a quick manner.
Sheriff Aller, this has been around, the Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad, for quite some time. I believe I looked back and it was, I think, in the 1960s, whenever it was first formed.
So, right? Yeah, I actually went to the office this morning before I came here. And so I've got two books, right? So I've got my big book that every, I'm the director of the board for the Major Case Squad. Bryce is the secretary of the executive board. And I've got two books that I think every director's probably had forever. I got a big book in my office with all the past bylaws and all the stuff. And then I've got what I call my road book that I carry with me with telephone numbers and member agencies and things that, you know, if somebody calls me and I'm not in my office, I can start making phone calls for an activation. So I looked this morning and 1965 was when it was conceived and put into practice. And then in 1986, I believe, is either 85 or 86, there was a statute change in Chapter 70 that required written mutual aid agreements between agencies that were going to agree to cooperate in something like this, along with a specific statute that covered major case squads. So all of the ordinances, right? So every city, I have a copy of Mexico's ordinance. I have a copy of our county commission's ordinance. So all these, when they did that law change, all of these government entities had to actually make ordinances and local law to be able to participate in that. And almost all of those were signed in 86 and 87. But we go as far back as 1965, which, shoot, that predates my birth. So, I mean, it's been around a long time.
We're going to get into the Mason Sheets investigation and why Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad was activated here in just a moment. But before that, the last time it was activated was actually a case here in Mexico, as I understand it, the Chance Davis case. Chief Mesko, tell us about that. Why was it activated for the Chance Davis case? And just kind of remind us a little bit about that.
Sure. That's a good question. So when a chief or sheriff activates or requests the activation, it's probably generally going to be because it doesn't appear that there's going to be a solution quickly and easily. And so, you know, in the case of the Chance Davis murder, the initial information that we had when we responded wasn't a lot to go on. So it looked like we were going to need a lot more hands on deck, maybe a little more in-depth, in-depth investigation, crime scene processing, etc. That same year, we had the incident down on Toronto Boulevard, which was a murder. But it was not, we didn't request an activation for that one because we were getting information very quickly that was probably going to bring it to a resolution. So that was the decision point, is it was not evident or appear readily evident that we were going to know what happened.
You know, some people were talking to me about the case over in Fulton, and they said, well, there must have been some Mexico people involved in this because we have, you know, Chief Mesco and we have Sheriff Aller involved in this. That's why they're investigating this. But Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad is not just made up of Mexico folks. It's from all over the area. I think Moberly Police Chief is on that board as well. Is that correct?
Yes. Chief Link is the training director on the executive board. So there's three executive board members. There's a director, and then there's a secretary and a training director, because in order to meet the statutory requirement, we have to train, you have to have specific major case squad training to before you're allowed by law to be a member. So we have to put those trainings on, and then chiefs or sheriffs can send, you know, we ask them to send your seasoned investigators, somebody that's you know, realistically, you don't want to take a one-year cop and throw them into the middle of a murder investigation, because they really, you know, at the 1 or 2 year mark, you're still trying to figure out police work. But you know, my experience is mirrors Bryce's, right? So our last murder that we had was 14 months ago, outside of Vandalia, Matthew Stewart case. That particular case, we did not request an activation because within 30 or 40 minutes, we had solid information as to who the suspects and responsible parties were. And it looked like it was going to resolve, which it did in about 18 or 20 hours. Now, the one before that would have been Leon Wilder, and I did request an activation for that because literally someone found a guy shot dead in the middle of the road with zero. I mean, it was, so basically what we look for, it needs to be a true whodunit, right? And, you know, going back to addressing why Bryce and I were down there, we just happened to be on the executive board, and the bylaws require an executive board member to be present for any activation. So either me, Bryce, or our Chief Link needed to be there. So Bryce and I kind of teamed up and decided we would kind of rotate through being the executive board member present for the activation. So it had nothing to do with anybody from Mexico being involved.
Let's talk a little bit about the Fulton case now. Mason Sheets, he was a 17-year-old from Fulton. How did you guys, when did you guys get the call? Was it several days after this happened? And was it Chief Ladwig that reached out to activate the Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad? Just kind of tell us some, you know, a few details about that.
So it was hours. Our requirements are that we have to be notified. If you want an activation, we have to be notified within 12 hours of the time of the discovery of the crime. So, you know, we want to be able to throw resources at it while it's fresh and while information is flowing. I mean, you know, when an agency takes something and messes around with it for a week or 10 days and then decides they're at a dead end, that's the wrong time to start throwing personnel at a problem. You know, and this may sound corny or cliche, but there's a reason why the TV show is called The First 48. You know, getting on it quickly and getting that information sifted through is paramount to trying to come to a solid resolution.
Chief, whenever you get the call to come in on this Mason Sheets case, do they bring everybody to one central location in Fulton, or can you kind of tell us a little bit about how, you know, where are you working on this case from?
Yeah, so, and actually in the case of the Sheets case, Chief Ladwig called Sheriff Aller, that they just call one of the board of directors, and he reached out to other agencies, and then, yeah, their first meeting place was Fulton PD. I think it shifted over to the Callaway County Sheriff's Office. But there is always a, for lack of a better term, war room or place where all the investigators get together, all the information is shared, and then you break out from there and go work the case.
Absolutely. Now, this case came together rather quickly. I can remember seeing a social media post that you had put up, Sheriff Aller. Kind of tell us a little bit about how, you know, you had, I think, something like 250 leads to follow in this case. And You relatively quickly worked this case, as I understand it.
Yeah, and so to understand, and this is going to be an oversimplification of how this shakes out, but to understand how this works, so you put, and I think on sheets we had 20 investigators, so you put 20 cops in a room, and you have a briefing at least once a day, sometimes twice, and you go through the information that you know, right? So when we started, here's what we knew. We knew that this Sheets kid got shot. We had a general vehicle description of a suspect vehicle, very general. It's a maroon SUV. And you put these 20 cops in a room, and you give them that information, and you say, okay, where do we need to go? And they're broken up in teams of two, right? So we got 10 teams of two investigators. So we start brainstorming, okay, how can we narrow down what this suspect vehicle might be? So you send a team of investigators to look at that. And then, so you're sending these teams out to gather as much information as they can and then come back. And each one of those leads theoretically would generate another lead, right? So, and there's a lead officer sitting there that's trying to keep track of all this stuff, and God bless them, they have a tough job because there's a lot of information getting thrown at them. The advantage that Bryce and I had was we got to sit back and watch this information come in. We kind of had a bigger picture than the investigators have, right?
Sure.
Bryce?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So these investigators go out, they go out with a specific mission. They come back with that piece of information. They give it to the lead officer, and then the lead officer says, okay, there's another lead in this lead that you just followed up on. Go do that. So they leave again. These investigators don't have the ability to sit back and soak in everything they see. They see a corner of the picture, one puzzle piece. That's what they're carrying around with them. This team over here has got another puzzle piece. We get to see those puzzle pieces come in and start painting a picture of where we need to go from there, right? So we have a briefing typically midday where then we come in and we give all these puzzle pieces to everybody. So now we brainstorm again and say, okay, where's the next place we need to start going? And that's quite honestly how this materialized. We went from a general vehicle description to a nickname to an identity. But again, that's a serious oversimplification because there were probably 15 or 20 search warrants involved, 200-300 leads, which...
Now, do you guys have folks from your departments working on this as well with you all during the case?
So I had, not necessarily, but I had two investigators there, and I had three, actually, and Bryce had... No, I had two, and Bryce had two.
Yep.
And then there were, I think, two from Boone... maybe four from Columbia PD and several from Fulton. And that's part of it too. You know, like when Chief Ladwig called me that morning at 4 something in the morning, I know it's never going to be a good morning. And when he explained to me what was going on, you know, one of the things that we ask is, how many do you think you need? Right. And he wanted 10 teams is what he thought would be sufficient. And it turned out it was. So with Chance Davis, we had what, like 15 teams,
probably
20 teams.
At first, yeah.
Yeah, and then we whittled it down. So. And then with like Leon Wilder, I think we had 20 teams, like 40 cops running down stuff on that one. So it kind of depends on what the home agency feels like is going to be the appropriate amount of manpower.
And if I could just, so yeah, officers will come in from all these involved agencies. And that's kind of the point, though, is they don't work on anything from home that is in their hometown. They're dedicated only to that crime. So, yeah, we had officers donated. That any agency that donates officers, they're giving them up for however long the activation goes. Because, yeah, they don't get to, you know, in between the leads, run home and or run to their hometown and take care of some crime that's sitting there. So.
I guess the next question is, how does Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad get funded? Is it through grants, or is it just kind of a volunteer basis, if you will?
Every agency is just donating all their resources. That's kind of the deal with the partnership. There is no treasurer, there is no account for Major Case Squad. So, you know, expenses that are incurred, any overtime the agency that donates the officers or ponies up the officers, they're covering that. Food and stuff for the officers, that's the host agency or the requesting agency. It's just kind of in the agreement that we've all come to. And other little things, little equipment things, like I know we've talked about, I know Sheriff Oller's talking about some lanyards, identification tags and stuff that are needed. And yeah, just an agency will say, okay, we'll take care of that. It's that's how the partnership is. So.
With Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad, do you get extra services from Missouri State Highway Patrol, FBI, if needed? If you guys can
answer that. Actually, the St. Louis FBI office and Troop F are members of the Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad. Agreement signing members. So we can bring if need be, we can bring the full resources of the Federal Bureau of Investigation into a case, or and that's the other thing. We have these every year, these agencies that are members fill out a sheet, right? And they list their personnel, and if their personnel have a specialty, they list that, right? So Troop F, for instance, their personnel, they'll have a polygraph operator. They'll have and any specialized equipment, right? So that the Highway Patrol agrees that if we ask for a helicopter as part of a major case squad activation, they're going to send one. Osage County is a member. They have boats. I don't have a boat. If I needed a boat, I've got to come up with somebody that's got a boat that'll bring it. Just all kinds of, basically, this is a way to throw piles of resources at a problem for a quick resolution. Matthew Stewart, for instance, and I'm sure Bryce will attest to this with the homicide he talked about down at Turon Lou. But we worked that case ourselves, and it was, we were running down. You got to look at every lead, whether it sounds stupid or not. You still got to go. Look at it, follow up on it, because you certainly don't want somebody to say you were overly focused on one particular suspect. You want to actually try to rule out other leads that come in if they name other suspects and things like that. We were probably, from the time that we made an arrest on that case, on Matthew Stewart, to the time the last report was written was probably 6 weeks. To run down all those leads takes a tremendous amount of time with, my three or four detectives or his two detectives. You'll spend a month or better just getting it to the point that you feel comfortable that it's closed, right? With the Major Case Squad activation, Mason Sheets, we ran down 250, 300 leads in 5 days. The average agency, regardless of how big your agency is, you just don't have the capability to do that.
Tell us about Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad in the future. Are there any needs that you guys, have on the list out there, or, just kind of some of the things that you guys are looking forward to in the future, if you will?
I don't know that there's any lead or any needs. We stay in pretty close communication with each other, the three board of directors members, and in solid communication with the whole group, the board of advisors. And yeah, we're just going to keep trying to keep the partnership solid and keep our roster strong, and so we're available to help each other out.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing is making sure that as people move on and retire, making sure that we have, that everybody's got adequate staff to bring 50 cops to a major crime incident that are experienced, that know. And we went a couple of years without an activation.
Then
I think Fayette had one a few years ago that I went down for. And then, we went a solid 3 or 4 years without any activations.
Sure.
So, it kind of gets out of sight, out of mind, right? And then part of it too is, like this year, for instance, we got several new sheriffs that didn't even realize they were part of a major case. And then, new chiefs sure. Come and go. And some of this stuff gets overlooked and forgotten, which is why, every year we have a board of advisors meeting, which is every chief, every sheriff that are members. And then we try to make sure that the new chiefs and sheriffs coming in understand what the Major Case Squad is all about and understand the requirements, and then understand the you know, we had one sheriff, and you were probably there for the, I think you might have been there for this. We had one sheriff that said, hey, I have nothing to bring to the table. You know, we're going to back out. And you know, we kind of had to have a conversation and say, it's not what you can bring to the table for us. It's what we can do for you. You know, if you have a whodunit murder, are you going to have the manpower to deal with that? Well, no. Okay, we don't care if you can bring anything. Right. You know, we're not interested in what you can bring. We're interested in trying to help you get your major crime solved, and you know, hold a murderer accountable. So it's really about the idea of cooperation, right? It's and I'll tell you, it's really an amazing thing when you start on a Monday morning at 9 o'clock, going, man, this is tough. We have nothing other than a basic vehicle description. And by Friday afternoon, you've identified suspects and you're trying to hunt them down. To watch that come together in 5 days is, you know, most people are familiar with, you know, what they see on TV, right? So we can solve it in an hour. By day, and, you know, Bryce will tell you, by day three, I think, I called him and I said, man, I'm thinking about just, we're running out of leads. I'm thinking about just calling this off and deactivating. And he said, give it one more day. So I thought about it and I thought, okay, we'll give it one more day. And midpoint through the next day, whammo, here we go. We're back up with solid information. And, you know, in another day and a half, we're to the point where we're out, you know, we send the flying monkeys out to hunt these folks down. So, I mean, it's really a cool thing to watch.
Yeah.
I can think back about like the Chance Davis case and stuff. And honestly, the warrants weren't obtained during the activation. The M Squad was deactivated after day three. But the amount of information, the foundation that call out had laid, left what was left over was very focused, and we just needed to polish up a couple things to then go ahead and get those warrants. So, it's a pretty cool thing. Everybody working together, right? And that's our goal. So,
well, I thought of a wild card question here while I'm talking to both of you guys, and if somebody came and pitched to you guys a TV series about the Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad, a behind the scenes look. Well, what would your all's answer be to that, yes or no?
You know, as long as the understanding was out there that, because I'm all about transparency, right? But as long as the understanding was out there that you are watching organized chaos, it's not going to make any sense until it's over. because it is truly, when you have that many cops and that much information getting slung around, it is truly organized chaos. It's even difficult to put into words. Maybe Bryce can explain.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, and that's the thing. So as far as a TV series, I don't think it would get many sponsors, because sitting in the war room's not an impressive thing to look at. It's not the thing you see on TV where someone finds the magic print, automatically knows it's Bob down the road and goes and arrests them and they have a shootout. That's not really how it works. But yeah, there is a lot of information when you know, think about maybe you're diving into the victim's history to find out who they were associated with. There involves electronics, search warrants and stuff. That's not good TV, right? That's a bunch of typing on a computer.
Yeah.
So, but then all these people, all these investigative teams running around, and they come back and they say, hey, this person said this, or this person showed that, and hey, I found a video that indicates this. And then it goes in, because you also don't want to lose track of any of the information you get, which why that lead officer he indicated is so important, because they're making sure things get documented. Because if it doesn't get documented and gets lost in the shuffle, it really does you no good in court later on. So, there's, I don't know that anybody would sponsor that. I don't know, but it is an impressive thing to watch when you know what is needed to get a conviction, not just an arrest, but a conviction later on. And you know, that is a cool thing.
Guys, I want to say thank you for your time this morning.
No worries at all.
Coming in, talking to us a little bit about Mid-Missouri Major Case Squad. I think people have learned some things this morning, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it.
Mexico Public Safety Chief Bryce Mesko, Audrain County Sheriff Matt Aller, our guest this morning on Meet the Community. We'll be back with another edition of Meet the Community next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on AM 1340 KXEO.